objectivism across to most people, because even if they don't adopt the whole of the philosophy, they at least have to understand how philosophy works, how it is a systematized method of thinking about thought. And when people, they think about one thing, they think about another thing, and then they've got two contradictory thoughts that they're holding as true. And you can't do that. That's why that guy's playing tennis in his head. He doesn't have any basis for rational thought.
Well, he has a basis. I think he has a basis for rational thought.
Well, no, because you cannot be rational if you house
two opinions. You're right in the sense that, and this is what I was trying to say in the thing that I sent to you, is that if you're going to keep looking inside the box, then, yeah, what you're saying is true. But you're still going back and forth because you're trying to be objective, but you can't be objective because everything inside the box is subjective. That's why they train everybody in subjective thinking. There's no imperative thinking inside the box.
Well, the reason they're training people in subjectivism is because subjectivism is without rationality. And rational people are dangerous.
Well, actually, we're not. You're dangerous to the power structure, but to the honor, but to the honor and the mechanisms that run behind the system, to the universal principles, you're not dangerous. You're exactly what you're supposed to be.
But that's the problem. People who are exactly what they're supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
people who are true to themselves, are dangerous to the entrenched power structure because they talk.
Yeah, well, I only know this because of what I've seen. I mean, and that this is something that people have to get past as far as I'm concerned. Like, let's talk about a rational thought or an imperative thought. There's never a wrong time to do the right thing.
Exactly. And people think, and without trying to get too deeply into psychology, but there is a psychological mechanism, I suppose would be the proper way to say it, where, for instance, you take a prostitute. Most of the time, the reason women go into prostitution is because they don't have any sense of self-esteem at all, and they figure they're already going to hell, they might as well go the whole route. And it usually comes from having daddy issues. But anyway, the whole self-esteem thing is the basis for their flawed belief that they're unsavable.
Right.
And it's exactly like you just said, the whole idea that there's never a wrong time to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that psychological mechanism prevents people from doing the right thing because they feel it's too late.
Hang on.
Somebody trying to talk to you?
Yeah, and I just told him to hang on.
Yeah, who was it?
Oh, James Cox. He wants to do a radio program with me, and he says he's got 20,000 people that he'll market to. And it's kind of interesting that the website numbers are going up the way they are in the last couple of weeks.
I know, it's nuts. And I've been trying to keep up with all of it. It's hard to do. But have you noticed that from about, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 5 days ago, the site numbers have steadily increased.
Oh, no, I haven't noticed that.
Yeah, take a look at the analytics summary in the back end.
Yeah. Anyway, back to this thing. I sent you this. Or you said you were reading it. See, everybody has to understand, you could go through this entire comment thing that I did, and the bottom line is it's all inside-the-box thinking, because people, just like being trained in subjectivism versus being objective and being rational, the other part of the subjective side of the whole system is they put everybody into a thought pattern of limited liability.
Mm-hmm.
So with limited liability, they don't ever want to take full responsibility for anything. but that's a total violation of all the maxims of law.
It is.
Even like the commercial maxims that they talk about, they said, he who sacrifices the most has the most credit. And that's what you want. You want credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And to have credibility, you got to take total responsibility and total liability for your actions here on this planet.
Subjectivism is a disease, in my opinion. It's a mental disease, but it's still a disease wherein there are no absolutes. People don't understand that that's what subjectivism is. It's the absence of absolutes. And that means that there is no such thing as reality. it's a flawed premise from the very beginning. Because if there's no such thing as reality, is this conversation that we're having actually taking place? Well, of course it is.
Yeah, exactly. That would be an imperative thing. Of course, then when you start talking, oh, bless her heart, you know, it's like we're just a hologram and, you know, we're not really here. And that's kind of what this thing is with the name. Okay, fine. So they own the name. Who cares? The name is held in trust, and they're operating by trust. His thing was, who's actually having his liability here? Because since they own it, he's saying they have the fiduciary responsibility. The problem with the whole thing, you can read the entire 5 pages of this, and this is excellent. I mean, I went through it myself. I'm like, wow, this is pretty good if you want to get into this mental back-and-forth diatribe. And I put a lot of stuff in here about the debt and the death-based system, because that's what it is. It's debt, death, all these things that people are sowing. But the reality of the system is it's nothing more than an energy exchange. And although they own the name or they set up a trust, they don't have the fiduciary responsibility for it because they're not the ones operating it.
Right.
There's only one issue on this planet. Who is moving the pen? Because the pen on the piece of paper forms the contract that tells the universe about intent. They might have formed it. They didn't ask you to use it. They didn't beg you to use it, and they gave you options out for not using it. They even gave you options according to the right of self-determination so that you can use it, but the limited liability of their system is, just like coming out of the Matrix like Neo and the Morpheus and the rest, they have one final line to go back in. They could go in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So they've given you an option of going in and out and being in the world but not of their world, so that the liability for using it doesn't stick to you. And that's why Zion and the Matrix were allowed to coexist peacefully alongside one another. And that's what they've already done. They're walking around this planet by agreement with and having immunity because they formed up nation states. They took total responsibility. And then for those that didn't want to take total responsibility, they gave them the limited liability system and all the subjectivism that goes along with it.
Like I said, it's a disease.
So this is that's kind of like looking at everything in a nutshell. Now, it's a lot more complicated than that, or it's not. It's simple, but it's not easy. Let's just put it that way, right? It's simple, but it's not easy, because if it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
Right, and that's one of the problems with the whole subjectivist mindset. And the whole subjectivist mindset, again, it's the Hegelian dialectic. It's the epistemology of Immanuel Kant. All of this broken ideology that nothing is concrete, nothing is absolute, no human being can know anything, which is, to a certain extent, true, except if you walk outside, you and I have a disagreement on the color of the sky, and we're standing in the same place, is that a matter of perception, or is that a matter of conception? If you have an argument with me that the sky is green, and I say it's blue, an objectivist would look at the sky, say it's blue, and say you're crazy. You're crazy for thinking it's green, because it is clearly blue.
Well, the reality about the planet operates by contract. And
yes.
It's very, very, very interesting, too. Who did I have this conversation with? Oh, I know. Pamela sent me something on Drombolo Melchizedek. And I keep looking at these guys who are out there visiting with the shaman. They're all about peace. They want to make changes. She's telling me that he's got a new process for doing gold ore that'll do $200,000 a day. You know, I've already got other people I'm dealing with that kind of stuff. And now I'm dealing with Anthony. You know, next weekend I'm going, obviously, down there. We're looking at doing the water filters. We got 30 containers of aid to send to Haiti, this whole fundraiser. And, of course, Anthony's dealing with big corporations and Lowe's and big donors, and some of the people who he've had there in the past 3 days, he told me, are all worth over $100 million apiece. And none of these people have met me yet. Because I don't care if they are worth $100 million apiece. I'll just show them Lord Black down there in prison.
Oh, yeah, several billion he was worth, huh?
Yeah, several $1 billion. And the only issue that came down in court was standing. You don't have standing. We don't care about your billions. All property belongs to the state. You're a U.S. citizen, therefore you're U.S. property. You're going to prison. We don't care about your billions. Especially to a guy that has, like Leslie Rothschild, who they claim is worth over $500 trillion. A billionaire is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing. And the only issue still is whether it's $1,000 in the bank, $100,000, $1 million, $1 billion, $1 trillion. It makes no difference because standing is the issue. Black was a U.S. citizen. He was part of E Pluribus Unum. He's never taken responsibility to self-govern, so therefore they stuck him in prison. Those that had taken responsibility to govern.
The simple question is, does a slave actually own anything? And if you own nothing, are you a free man? Clearly, Lord Black's millions on account.
Yeah, it's just matter. It's just a blip on a computer screen. Somebody flipped a switch, put some digits in there.
Mm-hmm. And it's an on or an off proposition.
They did the same. Look, they did the same thing with Gates. Remember, I think it was in 2000. I read Forbes, and they said he was worth $100 million. I mean, $100 billion.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later, with all that antitrust thing and everything going on with Microsoft, and the boys pulled him over there to Germany to sit down and have a conversation with him and show him how fast they could take them digits away.
Yep.
And within a matter of months, he was down from $100 billion to $60 billion.
Well, not only that, but he rolled that $60 billion into the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation with the help of Warren Buffett, a man who understands how the system works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not... that. None of that was accidental.
Well, they got him on board, which is... You don't think he's on board? Look at him now. He's supporting vaccinating people and...
Yeah, he's absolutely on board. He's on board because he understands that the system is set up for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. It is to manage those who will not manage themselves.
Yeah.
Now that he's capable of managing himself, he's kind of off the tables.
Anyway, there's good stuff in this 5 pages. It's the reason I did it, because I talk about the same thing that you just mentioned, Senate Resolution number 62, where all property belongs to the state. You had the Dones versus Penhollow case. I think I'm going to send you a copy of that to put online. It's a 3-judge panel review. And I love the little part in the Dones case where people say, well, there's still state sovereignty, and then they talk about state sovereignty. And if you read the Dones review, it says specifically in there that the power that was requested by Congress was countersigned by all the governors in every state. And I'm the only one to know that's got a copy of it. It may be in the law library somewhere, but the copy I have... They've taken the pages off the internet now.
Well, I've actually read it. You sent it to me. And I understand why they took it off the internet.
Yeah, I mean, it tells you right there that the governors of the state signed all the power over to we, the people of the United States, so that they could take care of their treaty violations where they didn't pay the debt. And then I go into the little government is God thing about the G, and the G is Masonic. I don't care what anybody says. The letters are not letters. You can't write a letter with a letter. Letters are symbols. They're hieroglyphs. They mean something. They always have.
That's one of the things about writing. For instance, in the art of typeface creation,
mm-hmm.
every letter is called a glyph.
Yes.
And there could be 65,000 glyphs in a character set. The glyphs have specific meaning in each language.
Where do they get the word glyph? Hieroglyph.
Hieroglyph, yeah. Well, hieroglyph is actually another, it's actually an older word. Hieroglyph is an anglicization of a more ancient word.
Anyway, you were saying a friend?
Yeah, a friend of mine is actually teaching me to read Chinese, because you don't have to speak Chinese to read it.
Mm-hmm.
The concepts are the concepts. And the 10,000 word vocabulary that is the Chinese glyph system is quite ingenious, but it also speaks to their culture.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the symbol for woman is essentially a stick figure. The symbol for happiness is that same stick figure with a roof over its head, which tells you a lot about their culture right there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the symbol for trouble is three women together.
This is in the Chinese culture?
Yes, in Chinese, in the Chinese language, the symbol for trouble or difficulty or problem or... It's three women together, which I find personally hilarious.
Well, I don't know if we should talk about that.
Well, you don't necessarily have to, but you can leave the symbol for happiness as a woman with a roof over her head.
Well, that's what we're trying to do. You know, I love that little thing in the Bible. You know, the Christian Bible where they, you know, I keep going back to. There's errors in places, but you gotta take a look at universal principle, because this really is about reason, and it's about universal principle. Forget the history. Live in the here and now. If you live in the here and now, universal principle is all that applies.
That is why everyone, whether or not you agree with the philosophy, needs to read Objectivism by Peikoff. And I'll put that on the site. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not for the timid, because the language is very academic. But if you take your time and you listen to it, and the concepts don't make sense to you, go back and reread The Fountainhead. Go back and reread Atlas Shrugged. Then listen to Peikoff again. The idea is every time you listen to it, listen to slash read, you're going to get more out of it. It's just like watching Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I've watched that movie, I can't tell you how many times, as a break. And every time I see something, some stupid detail that I missed before that makes it even funnier. It's the same with everything. The whole plateau theory. As you progress in life, you're walking up a big hill. And when you turn around to survey the landscape has changed because of your perspective, because of your vantage point. Well, the same is true of learning. You'll learn more from something that you've already read the next time you read it, because you're at a different point on your journey.
Totally agree. And, of course, for me, you know, I'm personally going to recommend Way of the Peaceful Warrior. I've only read it like 15 or 16 times.
Right.
And because that's my whole thing about living in the here and now. If you live in the here and now, then the universal principles apply. And you don't have to build your life based on a past that you cannot prove. I don't care what you do, you can't prove it. And if you do prove it, the only thing you're going to try to prove in that is how the universal principles applied, so that you can use those principles to change your life. And my principle that I was talking about here out of the book of Proverbs, it said, you mentioned the term for happiness in Chinese language being a woman with a roof over her head, a home. That's a symbology for security. Well, I think it's 22:7, it says that a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge. Some versions say hides himself or whatever. The right of self-determination is not about hiding, and we're not taking refuge. We're building a refuge. And that's responsible thing to do.
It is a much more responsible thing. But I guess technically we are taking refuge, just not hiding. The refuge, the actual security, comes from understanding the way the world works and acting in accordance. You are never safe if you're hiding within the system that's oppressing you. You can't be.
No. And I'm glad we're having this call because, all right, next week I'm meeting Leslie Voltaire. He's the front runner for being the president through this election. I think it's in November. He's the front runner in Haiti for their being their next president.
Right.
Painter's already sent 40 containers of aid down there, and we've got 30 more sitting in the warehouse. And they could go to any country that we wanted to get recognition from. In addition, I commissioned a painting, and that portrait is almost done for Leslie Voltaire. It's probably a precursor, hopefully a precursor to other portraits. We're also looking at possibility of using that as a fundraiser. Like I said, there's going to be some huge corporate sponsors here, guys that are worth over $100 million apiece. And, you know, whether they want to do anything or not, I don't think they will. Until I think we're further down the road, I'm not convinced that the big money people like that are going to do anything, because they're too convinced their money's going to help them and take care of them. And it doesn't matter whether they know law, or it doesn't matter whether they have standing. They think they can hire an attorney and it'll just be the end of it. And it doesn't seem to matter that people like Lord Black go to prison, or what's his name? Snipes gets convicted, or Martha Stewart gets to go to prison.
Martha Stewart, she was one of the world's richest people. I don't think people are aware of the fact that she was worth about $4.1 billion when she was sent to prison. That's no small chunk of change.
That's amazing.
And Wesley Snipes was a multimillionaire several times over.
Yeah, but here's the bottom line of what we've said all along with this. I mean, I've said it many times on other conference calls or other things that I talk about. There was no such thing 240 years ago as a businessman or businesswoman admitting they did not know the law. They did not have to go hire someone else to represent them, because the judge, he's not there going, well, oh, wow, they got $4 billion in the bank. I think I should bow down and kiss them, because he's already got an oath of allegiance to someone who's got a whole lot more power than that, a whole lot more money than that. I mean, these people print the money. That's where his allegiance is to, and he knows better than to violate that oath. So he's going to do what he's supposed to do. And why people want to be under it, I don't know. I don't get it. It's like this thing here, this thing I sent to you on words and names, the name, it's just, there's nothing wrong with someone going down this path. You know, for 10 years, here's what the system is doing. They call it, in mortgage, they call it a nominal borrower, which means in name. So the whole system is nominal. It's in name only. Well, that's because that's what they did inside the matrix. A very interesting thing here, too, I should pull this up for you and send it to you. Someone just sent me a link with the mortgage fraud and stuff that's going on down in Florida. Mm-hmm. And they did a deposition of a woman who's talking about how the mortgages were operating inside the bank now and inside this big law firm. They had like 1,100 employees, doing half the people were not getting served. They were doing a deposition and asking this lady questions who was a paralegal, and they were like, how did these documents come about? How did this happen? How did that happen? And they were all sitting around just passing documents around. They all had notary seals. Here, stamp this one, stamp this one. Oh, here, this one doesn't have a signature. Somebody sign this. And this is what's going on in the mortgage industry, and they're all about the fraud. And then you sent me, and like three or four other people sent me that thing out of Georgia where somebody's proposed this thing about the right of travel. And I don't know if you got my email back on that, but let me ask you a question on that. Eat with the mortgage stuff down there, and they're saying it's all fraud now. And then this thing about the right of travel, and this guy even put into the congressional record down there in Georgia all about the Magna Carta and all this kind of stuff. And I would, it's like, well, the Magna Carta doesn't apply. That document was actually outlawed by the Pope because they held a sword to King John's head to get him to sign it.
Right.
So he signed it under duress, so it's irrelevant. And as a matter of fact, it's all irrelevant anyway because it has nothing to do with the here and now. You're not living under the Magna Carta. You're not in England. It's not 1215 A.D. So what difference does it make? People say, well, it's common law. Well, no, it's not. Common law in the United States is court rules and court decision. Common law is what it says specifically in the definition of common law is it's case law. And case law in the United States says that they can charge an innocent person for a crime that never occurred, and they're immune from prosecution for conspiring with judges to determine the outcome of judicial proceedings. That is the condition here, and it is common law because it's case precedent. So they can pull up whatever they want to. So my question for you is...
I don't think people understand the definitions of the terms they use. And that's a huge issue. That's a Wittgensteinian linguistic construct misunderstanding issue.
Well, the reason this is an issue for me right now, so fresh on my mind, is because I just... that the blogs that we did about never do this and then the comment never do this again, the guy Keith has been writing me a lot on the backside because he started reading my comments into the forum. And then he and I have gone back and forth a lot. And this guy, man, he's about to be on board with bringing his entire group over to our website.
I mean, it's about time that one of them is humbled to the fact that they don't know squat about what it is they're talking about.
You should see the emails. And he's a good guy. He really is. And you know what? See, here's the thing about it. Even when I did that, all I did was say, don't do this. It had nothing to do with blasting Keith. Because, believe you me, those judges actually are impressed when somebody will stand up and show more knowledge and show more guts and show more stamina and integrity and intestinal fortitude than they are the masses of herds of 99% of the people who will just walk in there and lay their head on the chopping block.
Well, that's I can attest to that. In California, I went into a courtroom. I was accused of speeding, mm-hmm. just simple speeding. And I went into the courtroom, and because of the fact that I was clocked from an aircraft, I argued the Pythagorean theorem. I said, hey, in order for this guy to get an accurate speed, because in California it's illegal to clock with a radar from an aircraft, it's mm-hmm. considered entrapment,
mm-hmm.
And they do it anyway.
Of course.
Okay, they just claim that they paced you.
Well, because 99% of the people they know are going to go in there and bow down and put their head on a chopping block.
Right, so I argued the Pythagorean theorem, and the judge was like, what's the point? I said, well, in order for this guy to get an accurate speed, he would have had to have followed me in three dimensions and adjust his speed if he wasn't following me in three dimensions to get an accurate speed. Since I was traveling downhill and he was obviously not descending, the speed that he got's inaccurate, so it's irrelevant whether or not that speed is faster or slower. He's committing the legal crime of hearsay. He's making it up as he goes along. And the case was dismissed. Not only mine, but four others that day were dismissed.
Yeah. All because you knew the Pythagorean theorem.
Yeah, simple geometry. It's one of the first things you learn in geometry, right?
Well, it's very interesting what they do at the lower levels of court. But I go back to one point, and I'll say this. I've said it many times to people. They don't do this with IRS. They're not in there to argue the Pythagorean theorem. They're only in there to find out, as the adverse party, if you've been a good trustee or not a good trustee. Because you're operating their trust, back to what we were talking about. It's their name, it's their number. They created it, you came along and started using it. You're the operator. And since it's all debt-based, and since it's all 9-to-1 fraction banking, you are guilty of the crime of usury. It's a universal crime. And like I said, there's only one way to deal with this system, that phone line in and out. Having that immunity so that you have a variation by agreement so the liability for using it doesn't stick to you. The reason why that works on a universal perspective, people say, well, if I'm using it, those other people are guilty. They're doing usury. I'm doing usury. Where is this agreement by variation? How does that apply? Well, it applies because, number one, they have agreed that we all have immunity for doing this because that's what the world wants. It's what people want. They like the limited liability 9-to-1 system. And from a universal perspective, there's this other little thing that says, okay, if a man asks you for a loaf of bread, are you going to give him a rock? No, you give him what he asked for. It's the golden rule. It's karma, whatever people want to call it. So if they're asking for paper or plastic, give them paper or plastic.
That's
your fault that they don't know better. It's someone else's fault. You didn't miseducate them, did you?
Well, you have to trade in the means that trade is acceptable. That you have to trade using whatever means are acceptable for trade.
This planet is not going to be fixed overnight.
This planet is not going to be fixed at all because the masses don't understand that it can't be fixed within the system. They don't understand Einstein's law of higher intelligence.
Yeah, I love that quote.
Right. You can't solve a problem using the same level of logic that you use to discover the problem. It's the idea is there's an analogy. It's an analogy used in physics to describe the limitations of human cognition.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you have a koi pond, and you have some large koi in it, and it's 6 inches deep. And the fish is 4 inches from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. Essentially, that fish lives in a two-dimensional world. Does that make sense?
Yeah. He's got 2 inches inch of water above him and below him.
Right, so there's not a whole lot of up and down motion. The fish lives in a two-dimensional world, so it has no concept of that third dimension. Well, we as human beings live in a three-dimensional world. We don't really have a full concept of the fourth dimension, which physics describes to us as the space-time dimension. We start to have a concept of it as we get older, like, holy crap, this year flew by, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not cognizant of what we have not thought about. Would it be possible for an intelligent fish to theorize a third dimension? Well, sure, if a fish could theorize.
You know what's interesting about that? And this whole concept of forming the nation state and immunity, you know, for 10 years now, and I've said this so many times, time has not flown by for me. I have accomplished a lot more than I thought I would. I mean, I don't think I was born into this world going, you know, I think one day, somewhere around December 5th of 2006, I'm probably just going to go file a document at the Supreme Court and issue a tort claim that if you can't answer the tort, we're going to use the tort to come outside the system, and then we're going to actually stand there 45 days later in front of the Supreme Court as a petite judgeship, and pronounce our own judgment against the U.S. for the tort and not filing an answer or giving back an answer, because then we already knew they couldn't answer. Who can answer to a tort? The king couldn't answer to the tort even when they did the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, of course I'm busting your doors down and garrisoning my troops in your homes. I'm the king. You're my subjects. You know, and that's what the U.S. is doing. Of course we shot Jerry Kane. He was a U.S. citizen. It says you can't dispute the debts of the United States under Article 14th Amendment. And if you do dispute those debts and you train others to do it, you're guilty of insurrection and rebellion. And we are in a declared state of wartime, and insurrection and rebellion during wartime is treason, and we can shoot you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're our citizen. You're guilty of treason and wartime. That's the rule.
I don't think people understand the concept of treason. It's like the words. We will have many, many, many discussions about the meanings of words in the future. People throw around words without any understanding what they mean, like corporate. Okay?
Right.
The word corporate. Well, what's the root of the word corporate?
Corpse,
body.
Oh, yeah, meaning body. I don't know, right.
Yeah, corporeal is body and the word real, reality,
mm-hmm.
a solid body.
Correct.
Corporate is something that functions as a body, because the suffix ate is borrowed from Latin, which basically means offices or functions.
Mm-hmm.
And the English language is made up of all these suffixes. So when you use the word corporate, you're saying a body, a functioning body.
Right.
With the implicit definition of a false functioning body, or a functioning body that doesn't quite meet the definition. It's just these linguistic issues. People have to wrap their heads around them.
Well,
the language. They have to understand it.
Yeah, and like we've talked about so many times, I mean, you know, we got on the website, the legal rabbit hole, the government has got rabbit hole, the science rabbit hole, the medical community and their rabbit holes. You know, all these different things. I mean, this matrix is just full of all these different rabbit holes that people fall into. But the language one is the worst. It's by far the deepest and most entrenched control mechanism that they have.
That's one of the reasons that I highly, highly recommend people choose a language. I don't care what language, any language, and learn it. Because, as Alan Watts likes to put it, or liked to before he died, it's the principle of triangulation. You cannot, no one can fix the position of an object in space without observing it from at least two different perspectives, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the
Correct.
Principle of triangulation. If you're a surveyor, you understand that. If you've ever done the line of bearing type stuff on radio, you have to have two different perspectives to fix the position of anything. Well, the same is true of your own culture. If you don't have another view of culture, you don't understand your culture. It's almost imperative to learn another language or spend time.
And you definitely couldn't understand their culture.
Well, yeah, precisely.
I love the guy who told me that he said he studied all the religions on the planet and they all say the same thing. Don't be a jerk. You know?
I've said essentially the same thing.
And I think Pamela's also the one that says, think before you start shooting other people, you ought to at least have the nerve to sit down and have dinner with them one time.
Well, that's the way old battles used to be fought. The generals that commanded each side, they would meet cordially on the field, off the field. They mm-hmm. would have dinner with each other during the nights when there was no actual battle.
Well, the difference in the generals, though, was they were going to sit back there and watch everybody else get killed.
The fact remains, though, they were civil to each other. On the field, they'll kill each other.
Hmm. Well, let's see. I was looking at this. The only reason people go to prison is for being a bad trustee. This goes into the name thing again. It's really what we were looking at. But he's talking about banks and ownership in the name. But you're agreeing to all these by contract. This stuff, your position with the bank is that of debtor. That's bank contract. If you read the account holder agreement, it also says that you're a federal agent because Title 12, Section 90 says that the bank is a federal agent. And if you're in an agency relationship with a federal agent, then you're a federal agent. And by the way, what they got you doing is operating their account because it's not your account. They assign the number and it's their money. It's government money. That's what it says. Public money, not private money. There is no private money. So it's public money, U.S. money, and you're using their money in their account. That's why you're in the position with the bank is that of debtor. If you're the debtor, you're not the creditor. It ain't your money. That's what she told me. In 1999, we lost a trust account, and they closed the account and just said, take your money anytime I want to, by contract. And I was like, really? I didn't read the contract.
Yeah,
I had never read
the contract. If you didn't read the contract, you have no basis.
Yeah, I know. I signed it, but I didn't know it. And that's the only thing they're going to ask you in court. Did you sign that? Is that your signature on that document? Because the first presumption is you read and understand every word. And if you didn't read and understand every word, then you're an idiot and incompetent, and according to them, of unsound mind, they're going to send you off, have your head examined to why you don't read contracts.
It's very, very stupid not to understand what you agree with.
Do you think the Illuminati, you think any of those people ever sign a contract that they don't know every single word on that document and know what it means?
I would wager that the answer to that question is no.
I guarantee you it's no.
I have no first-hand knowledge, but the same, but...
Yeah, exactly. I have no first-hand knowledge, but I guarantee you that they understand every single word, because that's taking responsibility, total responsibility.
Well, the smart money is on the fact that they understand it.
So what I got into here, you're in collusion with the banking system. It's about all these contracts that are signed. You're allied with the unrighteous throne, which is why they have to license banking. License, you know. I love all these words that they create. License, because you're licentious. You're dealing in a banking system that's 9-to-1. You're paying taxes to go fight wars. This had to do with being allied with the unrighteous king. They capitalize the name. Look at the words. Capital. Same word. They just change the A to an O, the O to an A, and they capitalize your name when they get ready to raise capital. It's a capital idea, right?
Yep.
Modification of treaties. Let's see. Secured party creditor position. Oh, when somebody does a UCC-1, they're guilty of two crimes that are worth at least 30 years in prison and $1 million fine, because they're claiming a name that's not theirs. It's not their name, and it's not their number. They cannot claim it. They are trying to be a secured party creditor over a debtor that already has a secured party creditor to it, called the United States. So they're defrauding the United States. Let's see. The man's the one that moves the pen. That's what this is all about, intent. In the old deed and dead were the same word. If you go look up old English etymology, it's about words again.
Well, even in the Pictish language, which is now a dead language, like deed, it's spelled and pronounced the same way. Dead, deed, same thing.
Dead, deed, death. The D and the TH were interchangeable. That's where the word death comes from. It was D-E-A-D, D-E-A-T, and D-E-A-T-H. Mm-hmm. It's all the same word. And, of course, they put the B in there because it's the symbol for the household. It's the old Hebrew symbol for the house, D-E-T. They tell you that the B is silent, but everybody likes to be told what the B is. It's silent, so they don't really know what it is. They're just told what it is. It's a symbol for the household. Therefore, debt is the death of the household. They put it in there for a reason. They do everything for a reason. Oh, yeah, this was the other thing about this stuff with mortgages. See, this has to do with testing the people. And people can complain about what these banks are doing all they want, but the banks are licensed to do what they do because you decided that you wanted to go deal in a 9-to-1 banking system that you knew was fraud. And if you didn't know it was fraud, you should have read the contracts and understood that it was fraud. And you should have read the mortgage document before you signed it, because it said right in there that you'd already received the money, which was a lie. Now, here again, the judge is just going to ask you. So what they did in 2002, and you and I both know this, they did away with all the requirements for getting any mortgages and basically went to a no-doc stated income loans. I got friends in the mortgage business. They called them liar's loans all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So these people are now getting hurt for what? They went out there and lied to get mortgages.
Say, it's the karma train running over them.
Yeah, what I love that thing in the Bible. We're going to talk about the Bible again. See, Israel, you destroyed yourself.
Well, that's... People don't seem to understand when they act out of Congress with their own mental faculty, they're being untrue to themselves. And anytime you're untrue to yourselves, you create that incongruity, and it's death. Compromise is not something to aspire to.
Oh, I know. I love that in the movie Braveheart 2. He said when his father told him, it's the ability to compromise that makes a man noble.
Which is a ludicrous statement.
Of course. Of course, because what did William Wallace ask Robert the Bruce? Now, what does that mean to be noble?
Right.
What does that mean to be noble? He said, he told him right there, he said, men don't follow titles, they follow courage.
Right.
I love that movie, man.
But that was an answer to the question, not the question, but the statement that the nobles, they have much to risk. You know, they have land. It's much to risk. And he's like, and the common man who bleeds on the battlefield, does he risk less? Risk is risk. If you really believe in it, and it's worth,
yeah,
it's worth your time.
Well, at the end of the day, it's always going to be about our honor and our integrity, because you know it. I love what Bill Arender used to say with A.L. Williams. You know, life is risky. Life is so risky, you're not getting out of here alive.
Right.
Anyway, I talked about the word soldier. Soldier. S-O-L. Soul meaning son. S-O-U-L. Soul meaning son. S-O-U-L. S-O-L. they're all the same word, but soldier, those who sold themselves. In looking at the Libra Code, and he was talking about peaceful inhabitants who make no claim of ownership, ownership being onerous. I mean, all these words are just, it's just on and on and on. But the point is that the Federated State and international law is looked at as a sole person. Therefore, it's why you see it on their money, e pluribus unum, which means one out of many. And if you look at those two towers in the matrix, it looked like one unit. It's one power unit, right? And everybody plugged into it, it's all part of it. So if you're plugged into it and you're not looking at getting out of it, see, the one of the things I was going to say about what you said a while ago about immunity, it really is like this puts you in a space between spaces so that you can do business and learn and then train your posterity from a more secure position, having that refuge.
You know, it's funny. During the age of the robber barons in the United States, there was a very common phrase, from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. Now, do you know what that means?
Mm-mm.
It means that an immigrant coming over to the United States who builds a vast fortune, by the time his great-grandson inherits that fortune, it's completely gone.
Oh,
why
because,
is that?
Because they don't train their children.
They don't train their children. The children don't appreciate the money they've got, and they blow it. They become the playboy, the philanderer. They just waste their money. They waste it because it doesn't mean anything to them, because they were never educated in the finer points of honor and increasing the profile of the wealth. That's what Francisco Ganconia, the one of the characters in Atlas Shrugged, his family for over 100 years trained the heir to increase the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way it's ever going to happen. And do you think the Rothschilds haven't done that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, big time. And so the point is, if you want to get technical about it, they're doing it right. From a universal perspective, they're training their children, whereas other people aren't. So people can complain all they want to, but somebody's taking more responsibility than the other, and if you look at it from that perspective, we see which one it is.
Well, in this country specifically, they've vilified the producer, the person who actually goes out and achieves and produces. What do you hear in the news? These evil corporations that go out and destroy and loot and bilk the workers. And I'm sorry, would those workers have a place to work if the corporation didn't exist?
Well, they wouldn't, but the question is, if they didn't believe in this corporate dream, I love that thing in the movie, what was it, Up in the Air?
Yeah.
Where he was going around firing everybody. It's a disgusting view of the corporate dream, the American dream, where 90% of them used to own their own business, and now you got the other numbers, they're all flip-flopped in reverse, where 90% of people work for corporations. And everybody's up in arms about the real unemployment rate being 20%. A lot of them people needed to be fired.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything.
Oh, believe me, having worked in especially government contracting, in order to be a successful government contractor, you have to do practically nothing. Because visible results are in stark violation of obscuring and obfuscating any kind of work ethic behind mountains of ridiculous regulation. And you can't comply with the regulations, as any taxpayer knows, because the regulations change from minute to minute. And their interpretation is subject to the whim of whatever the interpreter decides they mean. That's one of the catch-22s of subjectivism. If there is no absolute, then you're absolutely screwed.
And that's what that guy got in the movie Up in the Air. They all got screwed, including the one being hired to come in and fire everybody. And that's what he asked one of the guys. He said, so how much did they pay you up front to sell out your dreams? Oh, $26,000. So he sold out his dreams for $26,000 a year so that he could go spend 25 years working for a corporation and get the axe at the end, assuming that the corporation loved him, was there to take care of him and provide him a refuge.
They're corporate.
Right. So one of the things I think I'm going to put up, I may put up that little video clip called Barzoon, the one I call Barzoon. I really believe it's the most succinct definition of the problem in the United States that I've ever seen in any one movie.
The 80 Barzoons in the world.
Exactly. It came out of the movie The Devil's Advocate, and it far and away talks about the massive egos that have been built, and that everybody's just here for themselves. And it's interesting how Al Pacino starts out at the first of it on this diatribe, and you see Keanu Reeves kind of laughing. But at 3 minutes later, he's not laughing anymore.
Mm-hmm. That whole Eddie Barzoon thing. what he's talking about there is the unprincipled, amoral egoist.
Mm-hmm.
The egotist. There's a difference. Egoistic people are people who build nations. They're people who are trying to protect their wealth from looters, people who want to take it, as opposed to people who are trying to build wealth at the expense of society and everyone else. That's the Eddie Barzun of the world.
Right, the egotists.
Yes. Egotists are the unprincipled, amoral version of egoists. Egoists have thought about that the fact that the only way to achieve anything great for society is to achieve something great for yourself.
It's the whole airplane principle. If the airplane decompresses, you put your mask on first so that you can help others.
Yes, because without helping yourself, you're useless. That's like the poor man never saved anyone.
Absolutely. And even though you may consider yourself not an egotist or whatever, if you're in collusion with everybody else who is, then you just look like one of them. The world is going to treat you by your contract. I love what one of my friends used to say about that all the time down in Florida. A man shall be known by his contracts. So they're just going to look at the contract, and if your contract says you're a citizen and you're involved with E Pluribus Unum and one of them, that's how they're going to treat you.
That's one of the ways that we'll call it evil makes inroads, is compromise. Because if you compromise with evil, evil wins. It doesn't matter what the compromise is, even a seemingly harmless one, because that's establishing a beachhead. The concept of establishing a beachhead. But when you're doing an invasion of a country with a coastline, the first place you set a foothold on the beach, that's establishing a beachhead. And from there, you have a base of operations to take over the entirety of the country.
It's amazing how we use all these military terms to classify things that we're talking about under with the right of self-determination, which in and of itself is found under peaceful settlements of dispute. But,
yes.
but the reality is, that's what I'm working on. Why are you going down to meet with the presidential candidate for Haiti to establish a beachhead there?
Yes, peaceful beachhead.
Yeah, of course. Exactly. Yeah. Working with the Maori tribe out in New Zealand as far as land claim, it's coming. And the website's come along, too. It's amazing how more and more people really are starting to, Aaron, I'm telling you, the emails I get and the stuff is people are actually physically downloading these documents, starting to read them, starting to read the Law of Nations, starting to read the consular functions and ask questions about what is this really going to take? What's it really going to take? Now, there's some things that they aren't considering. There's some things that our people really are not considering. We go back to the three keys to freedom. You got to take care of finances. You got to have the resources to do this.
That's one of the things that, if you've ever read the book, The Millionaire Mindset, is that what it's called? The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind?
The Science of Getting Rich? No.
Yeah, The Science of Getting Rich. The idea behind that book is people who are rich, mm-hmm. you can take away everything they've got, they'll be rich again in a year.
Right.
Because they know how. It's ingrained in them.
Right.
Well, until you get to that point, it doesn't matter what your means of currency exchange is. You make that currency.
Well, there is no currency on this planet other than intellectual property and labor and energy. That's it.
Precisely. And if you're not putting out energy in exchange for currency, then you're...
it has to be. Yeah, but people have to do it in the right direction. They have to understand trends. They've got to get involved with things that are going up instead of things that are going down. Corporate America is going down, period. That's it. But let me go through this real quick. He keeps talking about peaceful inhabitants. And I keep telling them it's about pledging, it's about taking responsibility, training your children, and that's what they do. Let's see if there's anything else in here I really wanted to cover anymore. Oh, he's talking about the name. I love the fact that I changed my own name in court. That just still blows my mind that I did that. But I didn't, because I was so, like, meditated and prayed up or whatever, I didn't know I was going to do that, but I did it anyway. Mm-hmm. I would say it just happened, but I don't believe in coincidence, so... Going into the economic status, the thing status comes from the word of status. This is a good blog in the sense that it goes into a lot of these things about words. And nominal borrow, nominal means in name only. Read Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. Oh, I love that thing in the movie Pirates at World's End. That when he was doing the map, remember the whole up is down thing?
Mm-hmm.
And they had to basically... This is them getting out of hell, which is the hell that people are in here. Look at it. They're telling people, you're in hell. And if you're going to get out of this hell, which they call an Admiralty Davy Jones locker, mm-hmm. then you have to rock the boat.
Yeah.
And then you got to turn the whole ship upside down And then once your ship is upside down and you can actually see again, then at the right time, you have the green flash, boat turns itself back upright, now you're back in the real world. Imagine. That movie was amazing. The Brethren Court, you know, everybody's brethren. Usury, I got into usury here. Names, let's see, as per the birth certificate, the legal rabbit hole, patriot rabbit hole. Oh, yeah. This is the reason why people have to learn and teach their posterity. There is this thing out there called the International Public Order. It's the purpose for the website. Some people are saying, well, how long is it going to take me to learn this? And I go, the rest of your life. Because you're going to have to keep learning it because it's going to evolve and you're going to be required to train your children. Otherwise, what did you just say? Shirt sleeve to shirt sleeve?
Shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations.
Yeah. You know, people, see, they thought that being here was like coming to Disney World. It's not. It's a full-time job. You know, take responsibility. It doesn't mean you can't take a vacation every once in a while. Take a break. Turn the television off. They are telling you a vision to program you. They call them programs. This is not a coincidence.
That's a great book to help you eliminate the superfluity of life.
Which one is that?
It's called The 4-Hour Work Week. It's by a guy named Tim Ferriss. Highly, highly recommend that book. In the book, he talks about how senseless it is to answer email every day and how 90% of the email you get is junk. Evaluate your day. Seriously. How much time do you waste doing things that are absolutely non-essential?
One of the things about doing this, and you're talking about time, I mean, for the first 4 years, and running business, this goes back to 99 and 2000, we came back here from 2001 to 2005, 2006, and running business and being involved in business, we never watched television. If I wasn't working business, I was studying something. I was picking up a court case. I was reading a document. I was studying the rules. I was studying the codes. But my whole premise all along, even what had gotten us to St. Kitts and then brought us back here, was to learn this. You know, I learned out there and having to come back here, seeing other people trying to leave the geography, thinking it was getting them outside the jurisdiction. It doesn't get you outside the jurisdiction. Because their jurisdiction over their citizens is global, because they just treat them like cattle. They look like cattle. They look like cars, like Fords, okay? We got to do a recall. Here, there's a recall. Go pick that one up. He's defective.
It's just like when you're driving through the countryside and the cows have broken the fence. They do, but it brings them all back inside the fence.
I like that word, defective. Yeah, that one defected. He's down there in Panama. Go get his butt back up here. Or tell Panama to send him. We'll pay for the plane ticket. Believe me, those other jurisdictions, by treaty, they have no obligation to protect a United States citizen whatsoever.
Right.
None. And they will not. Every once in a while, you will get one to grant political asylum. But there's a problem with that as well, Aaron, and this is something I haven't talked about. In the 7th International Conference of American States, the United States would not sign on to the doctrine of asylum. The United States does not believe in asylum. They won't grant it, and they don't believe the others should be able to grant it, and that's why they'll go pick up their citizens, even if they have to do it covertly.
That's very telling, too. It's the treaties that the U.S. won't sign and the treaties that they do sign. It tells you where their mindset is. People still, to this day, will argue that treaties are not the supreme law of the land, even though it says flat out in the Constitution that they are.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of treaties, too, like the 6th International Conference of American States that the U.S. did sign, which says that treaty law and the law of nations and international law is the law of the land.
Right. Ironically, that's why it's written in the Constitution. Whoa, they have to make it agree with the already existent law.
And, you know, since you're party to E Pluribus Unum, then if they believe it, you believe it.
Silent acquiescence in the breach of a treaty.
Oh, yeah, silent acquiescence and breach of a treaty binds an entire nation. Remember, we got a comment from somebody that said, well, I don't mind being involved with you in a compact or whatever, but I don't know about everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a consideration. He's absolutely right. It's one of the things that we're always careful of because people have to be willing to honor. You know, they don't understand, or at least in my concept, most people, because we've been talking about subjectivism and limited liability. When the founders did what they did with the United States of America, they pledged to each other their lives, fortune, and sacred honor. Well, that's a marriage. They're willing to die for each other. They're willing to pledge all of their money. They didn't pledge 10%. They didn't pledge 15%. They pledged 100%. Now, that's commercial credibility right there. You pledge 100%, you got credibility. And they did recognize that in international law. King Louis said, oh, wow, you guys are willing to pledge everything? Fine, we'll start making you boys loans if you need it.
Dutch did the same thing. They made loans on that basis as well.
and then there's sacred honor, which means they had to honor the agreement. And there's some things that people don't know. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. There were times in those conventions where it was like, okay, we need you to donate your ships. We need some soldiers. We need some boots. We need some guns. You know, you guys have them. You got to donate them. You've already pledged. Some of them get that feeling like, well, I'm doing more than so-and-so. It didn't matter who was doing more than so-and-so. Everybody was doing 100%. That's it. One guy might have two more rifles than another guy. It didn't matter. They all did 100%. And so they would get asked in Congress assembled, what didn't you understand about that pledge agreement that you signed?
I think the idea of signing a document and then refusing to honor it comes once again from subjectivity.
And this is the comment people get into. Well, I didn't know when I signed it that there was that much fraud involved. I didn't know that I was being lied to. I didn't know about all this misrepresentation. Well, fine. That's the position I was in at age 40. Because I, like, when they said, if you'll read your contract with this bank, I never read the contract, so I didn't know anything about it. I couldn't tell you anything about a bank contract. I could tell you how I signed my name on the check. As far as reading and studying contract and understanding what banking was really all about, I had no clue. I didn't understand that the word dollars, when they printed it on there, is actually a lie, because that dollar is denominated in gold. But you're not using gold. So since they made you the accountant for the bank on their account, and therefore you're holding an office of honor, trust, or profit underneath their constitution, therefore they can tax you as one of their public agents holding their trust inside the bank, you being the debtor trustee at that. What I learned was, if I'm going to be the accountant, I would cross out the dollar sign on there and I would write EEOD, which meant exchangeable evidences of debt. Because the bank account was not dealing in dollars, the only place that was defined was in the Coinage Act, which had to do with gold and silver. The bank was not dealing in dollars. They're dealing in units of account or units of exchange. They're not dealing in dollars. I used to doctor up those checks so much. I mean, they had to be looking at me like, gosh, this guy's ballsy. And I was. But it took pressing the system. It took testing the system, like testing all things. It's kind of like in the Matrix. I mean, the Matrix movie, he had to do a total download on the system to see what he had been involved in. And then go in and test it, far against those agents a little. Mm-hmm. And we did that. I mean, I didn't just get to the Supreme Court by accident. So we tested all things. We tested the system, only to understand and come back and say, oh, well, there's no rights in this system. There's nothing you can do. It's a matrix.
You know, that back to the whole dollar thing?
Mm-hmm.
What is the origin of the word dollar?
It's an admiralty term.
But in ancient romance languages, the dolor... Mm-hmm. Dolores, the name Dolores,
right.
Sorrowful, sorrows, pain. That word itself means pain or sorrow.
Well, that's interesting. And I wonder if that also relate. Well, that would relate to rowing a boat.
Yes.
Because the dowel was the thing that held the oar. So the oar passed through the dowel. And they would row the boat.
Job.
Yeah, they would row the boat. Pain and sorrow.
In the movie,
I guess their girlfriend's name was Dolores.
in the very recent Robin Hood,
uh-huh.
They're singing a song while the men rowing the boat are rowing the boat, trying to get them back to England. You gotta see the movie. It's an interesting movie because it's very much about honor.
Okay, this is what I wanted to discuss with you is I want to find out what you think about. You sent me that email on the Georgia House resolution that they're going to pass undoing the right to have, or the regulation or privilege to have a license. What did you think
yes.
of that?
I think that's entertaining because that's there's a subset of the Patriot crowd.
Mm-hmm.
They call them right to travel,
mm-hmm.
the right to travel group.
Mm-hmm.
That they use this argument. It's actually a brilliant argument. Sadly, have used it in court many times. A guy named Miller, Carl Miller,
mm-hmm.
First turned me on to this idea. Now, the deal is that if you use the Federalist Papers, which the Supreme Court have held as the will and intent of the framers of the Constitution. There is an article in the Federalist Papers that describes the right to travel. And it says that the right to travel is a right so basic it needs not be mentioned in the Constitution to be constitutionally guaranteed. Makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that right to travel is to travel in and between the states, unencumbered by regulation. So they use that in combination with Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham and Thibodeau versus U.S. and various other court cases, but the most important being Shuttlesworth, wherein the Birmingham police arrested a guy named Shuttlesworth who staged a peaceful sit-in on the steps of the Capitol building in Birmingham. And they arrested him because he had not applied for and paid for the permit to hold the demonstration. Well, the right to peaceably assemble was a constitutionally guaranteed right, and so the Supreme Court said no state, has a right to take constitutionally guaranteed right, convert it to a privilege and charge a fee and issue a license for it. So that's the crux of the argument. That
I love that, though. There you go. State sovereignty went out the window again. I love it when we hear the Supreme Court speak.
Yeah, this is the thing. There's a catch-22 in that decision. If states are sovereign, they can do whatever the hell they want, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, they're not sovereign because the Supreme Court said, hey, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm, yeah, well, it goes back to the Domes case. We got to put that one up online because it's just blatant. The governor's countersigned all that power away. Look, they had to. They were in violation of treaty. They were going back to war if they didn't guarantee King get his debt, period. Mm-hmm. That's it. Not just King of Great Britain, but also King Louis and the King of Holland, because Holland was like, where's my 10 mil, baby?
Mm-hmm.
Which ain't 10 mil today. It's more like 15 billion?
Yeah, 15 billion, give or take.
Yeah.
The idea, though, the right to travel people have decided, and there's no way on God's green earth that is going to pass in Georgia.
Well, let's look at the scenarios. For me, I look at this, be careful what you ask for, you just might get it. So what happens if they pass this? First of all, they made a decision about who's free and who's not, and we already know Americans are not free. They are granted civil rights, and those rights can be ungranted. If they can be ungranted, you're not free.
By definition of the word right.
Go back to the freedom thing. We talked about Braveheart a while ago when he said it's all worthless without freedom. Okay, so why do we do this? Why is the right of self-determination important? So when you look at stuff like this and getting outside their system, why would you want to be outside their system? Well, this is, to me, a total setup. Because I've already seen the level of activity that's increased from the Patriot crowd, that they're having an impact. You know, the Restore America plan. Look at it, Georgia now. They're going to change. Okay? Be careful what you pray for. You just might get it.
Mm-hmm.
If this passes, you got at least 70 to 80 years of regulation now that are going to have millions of lawsuits over. And if Georgia sets the precedent, it's going to happen in all the rest of the states. Now, if all the rest of the states shoot it down because it's Georgia, what happens with that? Civil war. What also happens here is if Georgia passes it and the other states don't follow, you're going to see a massive influx of people because the right to travel is a basic freedom that people really want. So you're going to have 20% of people in the United States just pick up, sell their houses, and get out because the property values are going down anyway. They're going to go to Georgia. Georgia real estate values will go up. Jobs will go up. Now you got what? You got states vying against one another. I'm just running out some scenarios here. What could happen with this? In addition to that, now you got the Fed. What's going to happen when the Fed steps in and says, hey, you can't do that. This is all unconstitutional. We're going to do what they did in that case you were just talking about in Birmingham, Alabama. We'll pull this into Supreme Court because the whole DMV system is now nationalized under one DMV under the Department of Transportation. The states don't have the authority to do this.
I strongly suspect that part of the driving factor behind this piece of legislation is the Department of Homeland Security. The whole real ID that the Fed can't seem to pass because the states won't enact it, that whole thing. The idea is the states trying to rebel against federal authority. Well, they will get their just desserts.
So now you're back to real ID, and now you're back to a national driver's license versus a state driver's license.
Yep, problem solved.
But this is a prelude to civil war. This is a prelude to chaos, and we know who capitalizes there. You know, what is it about being in the United States where people think this... I mean, the CIA is here. This is like a CIA... scenario to me. Are the guys that train assassins to go kill other people.
Have you ever seen the movie Once Upon a Time in Mexico?
That was Banderas?
Yeah, Antonio Banderas and Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. Johnny Depp's character, he's a CIA agent. His job is to make sure that there is no excellence. One of the things he's talking about is how he orders the same dish in every restaurant he goes to. Very simple, it's a pulled pork dish.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's talking to Antonio Banderas. He might be talking to the woman. I don't recall. But he's talking to her, and he said, I order this every time I go anywhere. And he said, and this particular dish is so good, it's unbelievable. He said, in fact, it's so good, when we finish, I'm going to go back there and I'm going to shoot the cook because it's too good.
Shoot the cook.
And he does. He goes back and he kills the guy who made it. His job is to make sure that the balance doesn't wildly swing out of favor.
To maintain mediocrity.
Yes.
I don't remember who was the CIA director in 1981, but I love that quote that he was quoted as saying that we'll know our disinformation campaign was successful when everything the American public knows is false.
Well, that's once again, a subjectivism rearing its ugly head. You've been taught that subjectivism is true whether or not you know it. People subscribe to a philosophy whether or not they understand that philosophy. And everybody in the United States is a subjectivist. Or Platonists is what they call it. People don't understand the word Platonic. What does Platonic mean? It comes from Plato's name.
Mm-hmm.
You're all a bunch of Platonists.
Well, let me ask you a question. Is there anything else you see about this bill, a danger that could be associated with the amount of chaos this could cause?
Well, this bill is one of many in a lot of state legislatures that is going to have the same result. And I agree with you. The point is civil war. That is the focus. That's what all we talked about how the timeline's accelerating, and then it seemed to hit a lull.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the belief that maybe they're losing control of Barack Obama.
Who said that?
Well, there are many, many, many groups of people who now believe that since all the Jews in his cabinet have been fired and or quit. But this is a mostly anti-Zionist group of, shall we say, thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
who think that because all of the Jews in the cabinet and high-level positions have quit angrily after screaming at the president that they're losing control of Barack Obama. Let's say hypothetically that is true. There's more than one way to skin a cat. They'll find another way to complete the plan.
Yeah, they never stop. The other thing is, there's more than one way to skin the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Even my dad the other day, I was over there, he's talking about civil war. And this is my dad. My dad doesn't know anything about what I know. He's older, got medical problems. But even he is now talking that he sees things going on. But what's interesting about that, too, what they say in the movie V for Vendetta, the United States, former United States, in a state of civil war.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the television program there where, you know, the woman was saying, well, she's lying. The manager of the TV station says, how do you know? He said, well, she always looks to the down or to the left. Or she's telling a story that she knows is not true.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, it's our job just to report the news. It's not our job to fabricate it. That's the government's job.
Yes.
So the other thing about this is from the Patriot rabbit hole philosophy of this whole thing here, more than one way to skin a cat. Okay, fine. They take away the obligation now to have a driver's license in the state of Georgia. So if the place goes into civil war or if they continue to crash the economy, what does it matter if you got a driver's license or not if you can't afford gas?
That's, you know, you've got to watch the movie The Road, or read the book. That's probably a better, maybe I should post the audiobook of The Road. The premise is that the world is ending, and the plants are dying, and there's no food, and people have resorted to cannibalism, and this father and his son are trying to get to the coast because they've heard tales that there are still places in the world that are not completely desolate.
Sounds kind of like the Book of Eli.
It's kind of like the Book of Eli with a completely different and vastly more bleak outlook. It's a horrendous story, but it's one that I highly recommend people actually internalize. Because when the rules no longer apply, you have to make your own rules. In the case of a societal collapse, well, do we have any modern examples of a collapse of a society which resulted in utter anarchy for a brief period of time, or even for longer?
Yeah, Argentina,
Kosovo, Somalia, Liberia. God, that's been ongoing since when, the 1800s. The point being, when society collapses, you have a mob rule scenario. And men typically join whatever mob they think is going to help protect them, because you can't protect yourself by yourself 24 hours a day. It's not possible. The whole meaning of no man is an island, which is why people form compacts. At any rate, the premise of the movie is, or the premise of the book, is the survival struggle of the father and son trying to get to the coast.
Sounds like Zombieland too. Although Zombieland was a puke of a movie. It was new. Yeah, I just didn't like that movie.
Zombieland?
Yeah.
I personally, that's my favorite genre because it's so telling. I feel like I'm surrounded by zombies on a daily basis because I can't have an intelligent conversation with practically anyone.
Well, it does become limited. You know, the blessing of my life right now, Aaron, is that most of the people I talk to on a daily basis now, the high levels of conversation that are had around my house now are just unbelievable. And it's with people that really want to do something, they really want to learn, they really want to take responsibility. And understanding that a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge. Not only does that include setting up a compact and building a nation state, but working with Dr. Painter and working with Anthony and dealing with Haiti and the amount of funds that could be brought to bear. And setting up any of the things that we've talked about, setting up an education system in Haiti. They've already said we could do it. This was going back 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Romania is the same way. Dr. Painter can get it done. We can get that license. We could actually set up an online university and have setting up an embassy in Haiti, Albania, Romania, Ghana, any place. See, because you could rent big buildings in Haiti for next to nothing on an annual basis and set them up as a quarters. And so if people need to leave and go somewhere else because chaos breaks out here, then fine, go somewhere else. And this doesn't have to be done tomorrow. I took the pressure off of me about getting this done even within the next year because it's more important to have the relationships in place and having people educated so that when people are ready to go, they don't go out there and violate the international public order and get themselves and possibly the state, the compact, into trouble.
That, I think, is one of the points that needs to be stressed to all the members on the site who think that there's a quick fix, because until you yourself have wrapped your head around the concepts, you are not ready to self-govern, period. And people are like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Step one, learn.
Mm-hmm.
Have you learned yet? All right, then you're still on step one.
Founders of the USA are a perfect example. If you look at the time from the Stamp Act to the Virginia Resolves and to the time they did that declaration, you're talking 20 years.
And that's 20 years of constant study.
What'd they do? They sit around with candlelight and read books all the time.
They read lots of books. Jefferson's library was enormous. And not only that, that man was so, so unbelievably intelligent.
Intelligence actually can be built. People don't understand that. You can improve your IQ.
You can't improve your IQ by watching television.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. Like, right now, do you know how many televisions exist in my home?
No. Zero?
Zero.
There you go.
Not one. I will not have... My kids are like, why don't we have a TV? We don't have a TV because you keep asking why we don't have a TV.
Stop asking, we're still not getting one.
Yeah, when you stop asking, you say, what books have you read recently? All right, well, that's why we're not getting a TV. If I allow a television into my house, it will not be connected to any kind of airwaves. It will not be connected to any kind of cable. It will not be connected to any kind of Fios television, because everything contained on that line, on that stream, on those waves, is meant to soften the brain.
Kind of like the Hulu commercials?
Yeah.
Turn your brain into mush so we can scoop it out with a melon baller.
It's amazing.
I love that commercial. And you're not going to stop us. Your brain's just going to go to mush.
Yeah, you can do about it.
Yeah, we were talking about the knowledge required. You were talking about Jefferson and the rest.
The idea, though, is those men educated themselves to the nth, and they never stopped. Up until the day John Adams died, he was still studying.
And teaching his children.
And teaching his children. And his son, John Quincy, was an apt pupil. He learned it. He learned everything his father wanted him to learn back in the days when kids actually valued their father's intelligence. I can't force my 16-year-old daughter to read or learn anything. It seems like she has absolutely no desire. She wants to be nothing.
Well,
she's a nihilist and doesn't even realize she's a nihilist.
Well, the peer pressure is just different today.
It's vastly different.
Unfortunately, when Hillary said it takes a village, well, it does take a village, but it would be nice if the village was more geared toward actual universal principles of taking responsibility versus principles of being whatever they're being right now.
It takes a village. The thing that drives me most insane about the village concept is that it seems like everyone that you talk to is more inclined to discuss the game than they are to discuss higher ideals. And when you get into academia, these people are bound by the dogma of the academic society, so that you can't even find solace there.
You mean those who have degrees?
Yes.
Yeah, they don't understand that the word degree came from the French word degré, which came from degradus, or degradus out of Latin.
To degrade.
Yeah, it means to degrade. So they went through all the grades so you could be degraded by getting your degree or degree.
Yeah.
But we were talking about the membership and people learning. This is why what I put up in July was so important. All those documents, all that information, I need to start reading those just specifically on blogs for the people that don't have time to read it. But a lot of people, like I said, are actually downloading the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations, downloading and printing out the conventions on diplomatic relations.
Incidentally, before you go too much further, we know who you are.
Yeah, we know which.
We know who's downloading what.
Yeah,
we know
absolutely.
How many times they've downloaded it, when they downloaded it, and when they should have finished reading it.
Well, it's like the guy who said, you know, I don't mind being in contact with you, but I don't know about everybody else. Well, we know about other people, and that's what—that's part of our. It's part of what has to happen here. You know, those founders. You know, people don't understand that, Aaron. 5 years it took them to get 55 signatures. 5 years, and hundreds and possibly even thousands of guys would not sign the Declaration of Independence.
Well, that's because of fear.
Yeah, they were scared of the king, which is why those 55 men didn't pledge for them.
Well, in the movie The Patriot, the guy who, I forget what his character's name was, but he said, there is no American nation. And to speak of it as treason, he eventually ended up selling his soul to the Brits and murdering his own.
Well, the here and now is the here and now. The here and now is the reality we're dealing with. The right of self-determination was put under peaceful settlement of disputes, and there is nothing to fear. Fear will paralyze. Your own fears will paralyze you. They almost did me in 2006. I almost compromised and went back in the system. And I really think that they would have just done me in really, really hard if I did, because it's like you put up the book 1984, right? And wasn't that one of the premises in the book, that if you give into that kind of fear, they'll just shoot you in the back?
It's the end of the whole mess. When you give in to that fear, you become slave to it.
Yeah, and they proved that to him, too. And that was one of the things, too. I love that whole thing about their whole, one of the premises was they were trying to say, oh, you think you're more moral than us. We're going to show you that you're not. And they did.
Well, that's taking it back to unthinkable. Every man lies to himself. It's my job to find that lie and break him.
Oh, you mean Samuel Jackson's?
Yeah, that was the most telling line I've ever heard in a movie.
There is a correction, and there's grace in this universe. And the U.S. honored it. Once I didn't kowtow and I didn't give in, and I wrote them a declaration of peace and reconciliation as ambassador, I don't get bothered anymore. And from here, everything's possible. I love going to these meetings like this and talking about what we can do and should do. And at the same time, my real goal, once we get some things changed and some other software problems taken care of with PayPal and things that are going on right now with some of this Patriot stuff that they're doing through these pay systems on the Internet. But my point is that the website is now, I want to see it become an education center for the entire new nation state. Believe it or not, I'm actually now getting some email where some people actually are starting to train their children on the website.
My second daughter, the one who's actually interested in this stuff, I do the same thing. She's constantly asking me, what else can I learn today? Which is spectacular.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's one of those things where the information's out there, and if you're ready for it, read it. We'll have it up there.